anti-drug advocacy groups in America, like the group called CADCA, Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. And one of their largest donors is actually Purdue Pharma. And they notably, even though opioid drug abuse is one of the biggest problems faced in the drug abuse community, mostly sat on the sidelines when it came to the CDC guidelines fight. They kept their mouth closed and did not encourage people to go in and promote the guidelines, which really contrasts with their approach to marijuana, where they've held rallies and organized grassroots lobbying drives to keep marijuana prohibition and to continue the criminalization of marijuana.
Well, it seems like there's just no substitute for following the money. I'd like to thank you very much for connecting those dots for us, Lee Fong. We've been speaking with Lee Fong. You can find his work on this and other issues online at TheIntercept.com.
Thank you so much, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the Media Watch Group FAIR, based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on FAIR's website. It's fair.org. And the website's also the place to sign up for FAIR's Action Alert Network. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Monday, you're listening to Say Hey right here on 90.1 KZFR, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake, riding solo today. Noobs is up in Cohasset. Jerome and Derek, both busy boys, so you're riding with me for the next half hour, and that's okay. At least I hope it's okay. Say Hey is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the likes of Buffalo Wild Wings, featuring 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HD TVs with nonstop sports, wings and more at 801 East Avenue. They're open every day, 11 a.m. till midnight. More info at buffalowildwings.com. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. So let's get right into it. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. Warriors with a 3-1 advantage. They have the chance to clinch in Oakland. Of course, last year that happened in Cleveland. The last three championships the Giants have won happened on the road. The last championship the A's won happened in San Francisco, which technically isn't a home game. It's been a long time, my point being, since a Northern California Bay Area team won a championship on their home turf. That being said, Game 5 is not without its controversy and its significant wrinkle, and that, of course, is Draymond Green being suspended for the contest due to the league assessing him his fourth flagrant foul after the fact. So if you missed any of it, let me just recap for you. Game 4, towards the end of the contest, LeBron James and Draymond get tangled up. LeBron basically throws him to the ground, and then instead of stepping left or right to continue on with the play, LeBron decides to step directly over his head, which is intentional, and it's clearly meant to aggravate and disrespect the player you do that to. It's something in basketball that when it happens, it's always meant to disrespect somebody. You step directly over them, your shorts grazing the top of their head. There's no two ways about it. That's a big, big, big sign of disrespect. And Draymond snaps up and basically gets in James's face, gives him a little bit of a shove. They jaw at each other. The play continues. They jaw at each other some more. Anyway, nothing assessed flagrant on the court. But in the post-game conference, LeBron James goes on national television and says, I really think the league needs to take a look at that. He took it too far tonight. Knowing full well, of course, that one more flagrant foul for Draymond Green means a one-game suspension because of the fouls he's already been assessed in the playoffs thus far. And so the league takes a look at it and decides that it was a flagrant foul. Therefore, Draymond Green is suspended for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. It's a total joke. It's being mocked up and down the league by players and fans alike. To think that somehow he wasn't going to be suspended after kicking Adams in the groin in the Oklahoma City series in the conference finals, but he is suspended because he got upset with LeBron in the finals. It's clearly favoritism. It's the league basically bowing to LeBron James. Had he not said anything in the post-game conference about the league needing to take a look at it, nothing would have been done. It's embarrassing, quite frankly. And I say that, of course, as a Warriors fan, but it's a joke. It was not a flagrant foul, period. If you wanted to assess a technical, you know, with it, which they gave James as well in review, they gave James a technical after the fact, fine. But there was nothing flagrant about it, and it was instigated by LeBron, and then the only reason any of this took place under review is because he made a big deal about it in the postgame. And that's LeBron James for you. He is not a bad person, but he is a crybaby, and he basically has the league on a string, and they're interested in doing whatever he says because he holds them hostage, more or less. It's a total joke. It doesn't make any sense, and it's going to affect the way Game 5 is played. I still think the Warriors are going to win Game 5. Of course, I thought they were going to win Game 3, and they got blown out. But it's really unfortunate. Draymond doesn't get to be in the building tonight during the game. If they win, he gets to celebrate with the team afterwards, but he's going to be watching the game from the Oakland Coliseum, where the A's are playing the Rangers. He'll be watching the game in a suite. And then if they win, he gets to come over and celebrate in the locker room. So it's really embarrassing for the league to take this action and really kind of muddy the series. And it could be just a way for them to not only appease LeBron, but to, in their mind, extend the series and make more money. And I know that we sometimes get off on a tangent about the league being corrupt, or any of these leagues for that matter, the NFL, MLB, whatever. But it's very possible that the NBA is interested in simply extending the series because Draymond Green is such a huge part of the Warriors team. If he played tonight and the Warriors won, he would unquestionably be the MVP of the series. If they end up winning anyway, I'm not sure who the MVP is, so we'll see. But it's bogus. That being said, I think the Warriors are really upset. There have been off-the-record comments made about how they 100% believe that LeBron James did this intentionally to just throw his weight around. And beyond that, Klay Thompson basically called him a crybaby, said he had his feelings hurt when Draymond called him a name. So there's officially very bad blood now, and I think the Warriors are going to come out and play really, really hard with that spark that Draymond normally gives them, even though he's not there. So, personally, I hope they humiliate LeBron and the Cavs tonight. I mean, it would make me so happy to see them blow LeBron James out of the water after his latest antics and selfish behavior. He is all about he has no interest in the team, none whatsoever. All this stuff, he talks about, you know, making his teammates better. No, no, no. He's not interested in any of that. This is the LeBron James show. He doesn't care about anything else. I always hated Kobe Bryant because of the way that he approached the game. And the fact that, you know, he's the kind of guy that's going to take 40 shots if he so chooses. But at least he won a bunch of championships. Yeah, LeBron's been to, what, the last five? And he's been to five or six. He's been to seven overall. But that's because he plays in the East. I'm not saying he's not great, but if he plays in the West, like we said before, LeBron James probably goes to half of those and may not have a single title. I just can't stand him as a player. He's an egomaniac. I know he's great and all, but he's got to be the most self-absorbed superstar on the planet. It's unbearable. I can't stand watching this guy anymore. So I hope the Warriors humiliate him tonight and show that this is how you play team basketball. Draymond's out, all NBA, all defensive NBA. I hope they go out and blow him out of the water like I've never hoped before. So we shall see. Other news. Sharks eliminated last night, losing the Stanley Cup Finals in six games to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lost that game by a score of 3-1. They got down 1-0 early, tied it in the second, but that tie only remained for about a minute and a half. Pittsburgh took another 2-1 lead after that and added an empty netter late, and it was a hotly contested game, physical. Sharks played hard. Pittsburgh was the better team. Their defense really, really kind of stole the show. I think the Sharks only actually took two shots in the third period, in the desperation third period last night, and that's because so many of their shots just continually got knocked down by the Pittsburgh defense. They just couldn't get anything through to the net, and it was like that for a lot of the series. Pittsburgh defense simply was too much. And I have friends that were at the game last night. They paid a pretty penny for it, and it obviously hurt them to see the Sharks eliminated. But I think if you're a San Jose fan, you have to be really proud of the way the team overachieved. They didn't make the playoffs last year. They were in disarray as a franchise for a whole season. They went out and got a new coach, sort of plugging guys in terms of roles. They added depth, and they wound up going to their first Stanley Cup Finals. They were predicted to win by many, but like I said, they got outplayed. Pittsburgh won that series, and I think that you got to be real pleased as a Sharks fan just to see them do that after so many years of not getting anywhere. And the future is bright. They have a lot of young talent, guys like Donskoy, additions like Ward. They're, you know, Martin Jones is a legitimate potential shutdown goalie on any given night in the playoffs. They're a good team, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch to think that they couldn't make a run at it again next year, which is something we haven't said in a while in terms of their playoff success, because they are or have been perennial chokers. So the Sharks overachieved, and I think it's pretty cool. I have some nice memories already from this playoff run. I was over in Europe, obviously, for a good chunk of it, but was able to use a radio app to tune in to the games late night, and I, for example, woke up in the middle of the night to listen to them clinch the Western Conference Finals. I was up at 4:30, 5 in the morning hearing Dan Ruzanowski on the call, which was really pretty darn cool. So even though I had to be out of town for a lot of it, I followed it very closely abroad, and it's pretty neat. And furthermore, wanted to talk about sports on the radio actually for a second. Going back to the Warriors-Cavs series, if you've been paying attention to the Warriors at all this year, you know that the media scrutiny with them setting the record for wins and all this has just been insane and silly. You know, they're asking people on the 1992 Suns whether they think, you know, the Warriors are the greatest team. It's just, it goes on and on and on with this narrative about them being the best ever, better than the Bulls, and then, you know, they have their trials and tribulations in the playoffs, and Steph gets hurt, and more questions, and now Draymond is suspended, and there's a brouhaha with LeBron James, and you have all this stuff about the Cavs. It's just been insane, and the talking heads seemingly never stop talking. It's overwhelming for somebody like me at a point, because it just takes away the fun of the game itself when you're watching on television and all you can hear are the Stephen A. Smiths of the world and the Colin Cowherds and the Skip Baylesses and whoever else talking to, you know, Joe Blow from the 1984 Milwaukee Bucks about whether they could beat the... It's just... It's too much. And I hit this point after, I think it was game three of the finals, where I felt like I was just on overload after that game in Cleveland, where the talk was just... It was taking the fun out of it for me. I wasn't actually enjoying watching the game. And so I kind of knew this was brewing inside of me for the last couple of months. And instead of watching the television broadcast, I chose to simply listen to Game 4 on the radio. I tuned into KNBR. I listened to Tim Roy and Tom Tolbert, you know, the duo that does all the games for the Warriors. And I just listened to the whole Game 4 of the NBA Finals on the radio, and it felt great. Not just because those are the hometown announcers. I'll admit that that plays a part in it because you're familiar with them and they know the team and stuff. But it was just less sensational. They were just focused on the game. You didn't have to listen to all this other mindless chatter and then, you know, hear Mark Jackson or hear Jeff Van Gundy and then go to the halftime show and listen to whoever else yammer on and on. It was just the game, and it was really, really nice. I'm going to watch the national broadcast tonight. It's back in Oakland. It's a clinching game. I'm gonna tune back in on TV, but the radio was there for me, and it just felt great. And I know that we're used to that here at KZFR, community radio. Anybody that listens to this station clearly understands the value in radio itself and that kind of good feeling it can give you, that personalized feeling. And that's what I took away from Game 4. I always know that. I listen to the radio a lot for sports anyway, whether it's baseball or football. Anytime I'm driving in my car, I'm trying to get a game if I can, even though we don't have a sports station of any kind based out of Chico. You have to tune into Sacramento or get what you can from the Bay. But it's special, you know. If you're into sports, sports on the radio is as good as anything, especially when you have a good team of broadcasters. And Tim Roy is certainly fantastic. Dan Rusinowski for the Sharks, for example, is great. It's exciting. You have to be able to visualize the game more. I think that if you were a casual fan and you didn't know in your head the way the game unfolded as you were listening to it, it could probably be a little disorienting and less engaging. But if you are into it, you know how the flow works, and you can tune in mentally to the picture they're painting, it's just as rewarding. It can be just as exciting. So if you ever get tired of the talking heads on TV, my main point, don't forget about the radio. Tune in. It's just as cool. It's there for a reason. It's free. I highly encourage that. Going to take a quick break. And when we come back, talk a little Giants Dodgers. Right back here on Say Hey.
Everything looking at me, I'm waiting for my new to begin. But there's an error message in my head.
Sunsets right here on KZFR. Say hey. That song is called Moods, and I want to give a shout out to my buddy Nolan Ford, who's going to be doing an interview with Sonny Smith of Sonny and the Sunsets. Coming up on, I think, tomorrow afternoon, he's doing that interview. Sonny Smith is popping into Chico, and Nolan's going to be doing that right over there for 91.7, and they do good things there too. It's local radio. So back to sports here on Say Hey. Talk a little Giants Dodgers. Just had a really great three-game series wrap up in San Francisco. Dodgers were in town, which is always exciting, especially when it's tight. And three-game lead for the Giants coming into the series. They drop game one. Bullpen gives it up. Then game two looks as if the Giants are going to drop the second straight. Reduce that lead down to two games. Bullpen blows it again. And then the Giants storm back against one of the best closers in the game, in Kenley Jansen. And they go double, single, single, single. Ball game over. Buster Posey with the walk-off. National television on Fox Sports. Afternoon, evening game. Really exciting. Actually watched that unfold in the city at a bar called the Connecticut Yankee before a show I was playing out there. And that was nice. You know, you're only a mile from the ballpark. It's full of local fans. And the place was going wild. Good Giant Dodger baseball. And then Sunday night, get to see the new star-to-be of the Dodgers pitching staff, Julio Urias. And he's 19 years old, first start on national television. And he throws well. And Jake Peavy, pitching for the Giants, who's had a, I don't want to even say up and down, but Jake Peavy was as bad as you could get over his first 10 starts or so. And he's starting to turn it around a little bit. Anyway, they both pitch very well. Urias winds up giving up a two-run jack to Brandon Belt in the sixth. And that is the difference in the ballgame. Winds up being a 2-1 victory for the Giants. Hunter Strickland gave up a home run immediately thereafter. But bullpen manages to get it done for San Francisco, and they ensure themselves now a 5-game lead heading into mid-June. So the June swoon for the Giants maybe not happening this year. A little early. They still have a lot of injuries to deal with, and that bullpen is full of questions. But taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers with a wounded offense and that questionable bullpen that we just talked about, that's kind of a big deal for them. That win on Saturday beating Jansen was probably the best win of the year for them, especially with Posey winning it. You know, he's not always been himself so far at the plate this year, despite the fact that he's playing the best defense of his career. He's struggled a bit in key situations. He's only hitting about .255. But a big series victory for the Giants. Now, if you're the Dodgers, you're 5 out. but there's still plenty that would lead you to believe that they're on the comeback trail, even though they're kind of underachieving right now. That offense is going to turn around a bit. I have a hard time believing they're going to keep scrapping like they are. Trace Thompson looks great. Brother of Clay. I wish he was a Giant. Clay wearing the Dodgers hat at AT&T the other day. But hey, when I made this point to a couple people, when the Warriors are playing the Lakers next year and Trace is there rooting on his brother, he's going to be wearing a Golden State hat, so it evens out. Anyway, you've got Udius, who is going to be a star in the making, even though he's got like an 80-pitch limit, I think, at this point. Basically, 5-6 innings max, and he's out of the ballgame. He may well be sent to the bullpen, which, as Preston Powers has pointed out to me, is improving of late. But when they get back McCarthy, if they get back Ryu, I think it makes the most sense for a young guy like that who has a pitch limit, throw him into the bullpen, bolster that, and hope that one of your starters returning in from injury can give you the extra production. So while the Giants have a nice five-game cushion at the moment, I still think this race is going to go right down to it. I believe they played 9 games against each other in the last month of the season. I would be surprised if the Giants ran away with this division. I really would, even though I think they're a good team who, when healthy, has a chance to really knock people around, especially with the big three in the rotation. I just think the Dodgers are underachieving a little bit right now, and that this race is going to be close all the way into September. The A's are still struggling. They just don't have it going these days. Sonny Gray having an off season, also dealt with injuries. You know, they just kind of look like the team you thought they would look like. They lack star power. There's just not much there. Look around the league a bit more. Cleveland playing good ball. They got a 3-game lead in the Central. Kansas City came back hot. Now they've lost 8 of their last 10 to sink back down to just 2 games above 500. Texas playing great baseball. They got a 5-game lead over the Mariners in the AL West. Now, I know I mentioned Houston coming back a bit, and yeah, they're 5 games under 500, and that's not a big deal, but there's a lot of baseball to be played. You can't rule out a team like Houston yet. Check back in late July, and then you've got a clearer picture. Baltimore playing great baseball after underachieving last season, tied for the lead in the AL East with Boston. The Yankees playing a little bit better, but I just don't see it. Toronto is in third place. I don't see any way the Yankees can leapfrog 3 teams playing pretty good ball in that division. The Cubs are beating everybody. The Cubs are 43-18. That's a winning percentage of 0.705. They're winning basically 71% of their games right now, which is incredible. They're on pace to win well over 100 games. They just have so much pop, and they're playing great defense, and they're just the rotation 1-5 whooping people. Like we say, you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs, but it doesn't appear that the Cubs are going to settle for anything other than a wide margin of victory in that division, barring a total faceplant. They look fantastic. Washington is now 4.5 up on the Mets, who aren't playing very well. Now, the worst team in baseball is the Atlanta Braves. They're 18-44. They're probably going to lose over 100. They're brutal. They're tanking, essentially, trying to get into that new ballpark next year in Cobb County, wasting the taxpayers' money. What a joke that is out in Atlanta, leaving Turner Field, a perfectly good and functional ballpark, to move into the suburbs and rob people of a bunch of taxpayer funds. So that's a joke. St. Louis is playing better. They're 35-28, winners of 5 in a row, but still 9 games back, like we said, in the division behind the Cubs. And then we got the Giants, of course, as we said, 5 games up. Colorado is hovering around 500, 7.5 back. A lot of baseball to be played, though. This is not going to finish anytime soon. Have a much better picture in mid-July of how things will probably continue to shape up. Buyers and sellers for the trade deadline. Giants are actively pursuing Ryan Braun right now, with Pence being out 2 months with that hamstring injury. Pagan is still out. Gregor Blanco, I believe, is 0 for his last 25. Jarrett Parker is hitting about 190. of starting in left field. So they're going to have to figure that out. And then the